All right. So that's kind of some of the baseline facts, how we got to where we are, what's going on out there in the world. Of course, this is a CLE, so I got to talk about the law a little bit, and I'm not going to repeat a bunch of the stuff that Catherine said, of course. But what happens is, why this matters to employment lawyers is, as it turns out, a whole bunch of laws are based on the concept of being an employee, right? So you've got, first you've got tax. I'm not a tax lawyer. I never give tax advice. You can see that in the signature block of my email. It says that for real. But you all know that if you're a W-2 employee, your employer withholds taxes and gives them to the government. And if you're not, if you're a 1099, the government is supposed to get their money from you directly. And so the calling somebody an employee has direct financial impact on our federal government in that they get more money, more quickly at least, from W-2 employees than from 1099s. Healthcare. My Uber driver, who described himself, by the way, Jay said, "I am a hardcore liberal. I want you to know before I say this out loud, Mike." I said, "Okay, that's interesting. All right, go ahead." He said, "Man, I really just wish that healthcare wasn't tied to employment. I think that's a terrible way to run a healthcare system." I said, "Well, that's an interesting opinion, Jay. I kind of agree with you on that one. But right now, where we are, because of choices that we all made 30, 40 years ago, most people get their health care from their employment. And in most situations, if you have an employer who has a health plan and you're an employee, you're entitled to benefits. And you're not an employee, you're not entitled to benefits." So again, that's how it matters here. Wages and hours, as Catherine mentioned, the FLSA protects employees. It doesn't protect non-employees, so things like minimum wage and overtime protection apply to you if you're an employee and not if you're not. Time off, the Family Medical Leave Act, for example, doesn't apply to non-employees, and so your entitlement to 12 weeks of time off for a serious health condition or the birth replacement of a child is dependent on your employment status. The EEO, Title VII, the ADA, the ADEA, all of them deal with employment as well. And at this point, I want to stop for a second and talk about definitions. So actually, well, here, let me get to the FLSA. I did the FLSA already. So let me talk about definitions for a second. Catherine mentioned that the definition under the FLSA of an employee is someone who is suffered or permitted to work. Not terribly helpful, but if you think that's not helpful, let's try some other ones. Title VII's definition says an employee is an individual employed by an employer. And I know everyone in this room knows what the definition of an employer is, right? Somebody who employs 15 employees. Okay, I have no idea. My favorite one, though, actually, is the National Labor Relations Act, which I think is it's a little farther down our list. My favorite one is the National Labor Relations Act, which says the definition of employee, quote, shall include any employee. I don't know what to do with that. Now, we've got tons of case law and board interpretations and general counsel interpretations that tell us what these things mean, but none of the statutes are particularly helpful, and it goes on and on. The immigration is tied to employment. You have to complete an I-9 for employees. You do not have to complete an I-9 for contractors. Workers' compensation, again, as Catherine mentioned, tied to employment as well. Generally speaking, your employees are covered by your workers' comp policies. Non-employees are not. Unemployment, as we're going to talk about in detail, generally speaking, employees can apply for unemployment and employers pay taxes on employees' wages to fund unemployment, not so with non-employees. And then, as I just mentioned, the National Labor Relations Act protects employees and, generally speaking, does not protect non-employees. Although we learned yesterday, by the way, that maybe that's not as big of a deal as we used to think. Uber drivers went on strike yesterday, and it made a difference. Right? Uber was shaking in its boots as they're trying to roll out their IPA. It's Friday. It's Friday, y'all. As they're trying to roll out their IPO yesterday, this week, the fact that a bunch of Uber drivers in major cities went on strike made massive headlines and was causing Uber to reevaluate a whole bunch of stuff, which we're going to talk about in a second. But legally speaking, by the way, if Uber drivers are not employees, then they're not legally protected from striking, and they could, in theory, be fired just for striking. Although, based on the way the Uber platform works, it seems relatively unlikely that that's going to happen. We'll talk about that as well. All right. So, Catherine mentioned, and again, I'm not going to go through every single one of these, but there are a bunch of different tests for whether somebody's an employee or not, right? We have a common law one that is state law. We're going to talk about that a bit, the Texas state test. We have a common law one that's federal. We're not going to talk very much about that. There's the IRS test. Not going to talk about that really at all, except with reference to the state test. The Department of Labor's economic reality test, the Texas Workforce Commission's test, which we're going to talk about quite a bit, and then, of course, the National Labor Relations Act's test, which we're going to talk about relatively little. This is six tests, and each of them have somewhere between 5 and 20 factors, depending on who you ask. But here's the thing. You really need to know three things, right? What almost every one of these tests looks at is three real things. Number one, does the company exercise control over the way the individual performs the work? That's an employee. Number two, do the economic realities mean the person really is an employee of the company? And number three, is there opportunity for profit or loss other than simply working more? One of the hallmarks of being independent is you can, through your own skill and cunning and intelligence and planning, find ways to drive up your profit margin other than just by working harder, right? You can reduce your costs, you can increase your efficiency, you can hire sub folks who work for you, you can do all sorts of things. Generally speaking, when you're an employee, the way you make more money is by putting in more hours, right? And if you get paid by the hour, that's the only way that you make more money.